really an honor and an opportunity to be with distinguished colleagues such as David, William, and my colleague from Mexico, but in the U.S., Vargas Bustamante. Here is the report. It's available in our website. I will be giving more details later. And as Gil mentioned, this was an initiative funded by the Ford Foundation and by my own institute. And later in the discussion of the initiative by the Ministry of Health, and with a large cadre of participants from the states, Gil mentioned, we had providers, we had academics on both sides that we came together to put this discussion forward. We focused at that time in small migrant community states, in other words, New York, Iowa, North Carolina, and Washington State, because we wanted to go to states that could afford the possibility for a pilot without being too overly political. But now we are aware that California has to be further involved, and indeed I am now seeing the importance of having much more political force from the grassroots and from initiatives such as the ones here represented to be able to be successful. So I will very quickly go through a presentation on the social protection progress in Mexico, social protection and migration in the U.S., Mexico, and the capacity for social protection and health on both sides of the border, and then to present to you the proposal. But in summary, the proposal is perhaps to an extent unique in that it first emphasizes by national health insurance as an important concern for both countries, not only as an issue on this side of the border. Therefore, look at health system integration, as already mentioned by David Warner, but trying to explore the possibilities of a Mexican leadership in this initiative. And thirdly, proposing an agency that could bring together this or bring about this integration on both sides of the border. So we have now a great progress in Seguro Popular, which many of you, I'm sure, are familiar with it, in terms of affiliating families to this new insurance scheme. And we are en route to, for 2010, having 11 million and 11 and a half million families covered, and therefore universalizing the access to care through forms of health insurance in Mexico. So without that initiative, this proposal would make no sense. So this is something new in the horizon that we can rely on and that Mexico can then use for that leadership. There are still many issues with this Seguro Popular. It's not perfect by any means. Here we show that states, according to their poverty index, the poorer states on the left have less access to Seguro Popular even when they are affiliated. So there are still concerns that need to be addressed. And we know that insurance is already having some impact on poverty alleviation. Here we are looking at issues of catastrophic health expenditure. A specific evaluation project revealed about half of the families under the insurance scheme, in other words, halving of the families that have catastrophic health expenditures. Other instruments have been less specific, but truth must be somewhere in between those three measurements. And we have, in parallel, seen a very important growth in the Ministries of Health budget, meaning that funding is now much more available to look after this population, which is mostly the population in the towns and villages that is sending migrants to the U.S. So there is greater capacity then also to cater for them if we look at the funding. This looks at the same effect, but looking at the various socioeconomic groups in various years, and we see that by 2002, we have greater equity in terms of allocations to the Ministry of Health. Most of this effect is due to other programs prior to Seguro Popular, but Seguro Popular is increasing that effect in terms of equity for the the previously non-insured. And as a result of that, we're seeing a growth in financing in the health sector as a whole, going up to 6.3%, with annual increases in health expenditure quite important, unprecedented in Mexico, of 23% per year, although out-of-pocket expenditure is still also growing. And we're seeing an equity tendency in terms of the funding allocated to the insured and the previously non-insured populations now decreasing to only 2.1 in that ratio. So in the U.S., this statistic has been shown in terms of the groups that lack health insurance. I will move quickly on this. The dimensions of this 11.8 million is that it has an important growth annually. Interestingly, 21% has citizenship status in the U.S., which is an important leverage for policy and politics in general. And, the question of the source of care, we know that they are lacking that. Questions of 48% of children had not visited a health provider in the past year, according to some very recent statistics, and 11.4% use emergency services, although, interesting that this is a lower figure than for the U.S. whites, debunking the myth of the emergency room utilization of migrants. However, it is still a very important percentage, and that does lead to unreimbursed care for hospitals and so forth. Let me skip on this one. Interestingly, 32% of the total population with no health insurance in the U.S. are migrants. And we often hear about that for these 46 million Americans lack health insurance. Well, in truth, is that up to a third of them are not Americans, which makes very complex the issue of how to address that. And Mexican migrants contribute 14% to the uninsured in this country. So it's a shared problem that can be addressed. Now, in the U.S., of course, being the most expensive system in the world, we have the issue of all this uninsured facing, therefore, a very important barrier to care, and the issue of the unreimbursed care that the hospitals themselves report that 5.6% of their expenses are not covered. I'm not sure exactly what's behind those figures, but still, it does represent 0.2% of the U.S. GDP, which is a huge amount. And in Mexico, we see that 45% of migrants are recent. Importantly, 85% send remittances, and this speaks to the very close relationship that Mexico has with the migrants in the U.S. Let me point to this slide. This comes from a study by Amuedo Dorantes, commissioned by the IDB to look at the remittance issues. And they, with a fairly robust methodology, have identified that up to one-third of remittances are spent in healthcare in Mexico. Although they don't establish this anecdotally, we know that most of that expenditure will be in private resources that are fairly low quality, fragmented, and so forth. So then this speaks to the importance of binational health insurance, that there is this huge expenditure that accounts for a large percentage of our total health expenditure, and yet it's not insured, and it does compete with the Seguro Popular initiative that we were talking about before. Looking then at these top two populations as related communities, we have that it's up to 27.3 million people in a transnational relationship related by remittances and related by problems of access to healthcare services and to a huge catastrophic health expenditures. So in the U.S., we have identified through our consultation that community health centers have a great potential to join in efforts to provide binational health insurance. They are very keen and interested in exploring pilots. Also, we have identified nonprofit insurers, such as those plans that provide the packages for Medicaid, managed care, and so forth, that could be interested in adding new products led by Mexico in their definition, in terms of a package of care for primary services related to Seguro Popular in Mexico, very much along the lines that Arturo mentioned, and with an important participation of hometown clubs and other forms of community participation to ensure access, reduce threats by any institution. In other words, to look at a non-profit and a civil society association. We have seen that Mexico has capacity to respond. We have analyzed that. So that proposal pretty much contains six broad aspects: the development of a doctrine that would be based on human rights, of a policy that would have two pillars, the primary health care in the U.S. under a defined package that would be fairly universal in the sense of the Mexican government addressing that or proposing that package as something that all migrants should have the right to access in the U.S. The agency I was mentioning before, plus the participation of insurance agencies as an option, although the articulating agency could play a role to ensure cross-border service networks and the community level support. So in terms of the policy, we mentioned the Seguro Popular, the capacity to affiliate from the United States, so that we don't have what William Dow was mentioning, that people then are sick, they never contribute until they reach Mexico, which, by the way, there are some barriers. It's not as immediate as that, because they do have coverage periods, or affiliation periods, I should say. But the Salud en el Norte, tentatively called like that, which would be that package, would be widely announced, and using a transportation premium that could be based on the experience with medical tourism to an extent. And then having this as the articulating agency, an agency specifically designed and governed to have be able to relate both systems to promote the package in the north, and as we will see, well, it would work on the diffusion of Salud Migrante, would build capacity to a form of accreditation of migrant-friendly services both sides of the border and truly in a reciprocal relationship, and then to provide some insurance functions if indeed there's a market failure in the capacity to deliver in the U.S. So Salud Migrante would build capacity within Seguro Popular to be able to affiliate in the United States, both within the consulates, as indeed right now they are planning to do, but to go outside of the consulates to community agencies to see them as promoters of affiliation, and then to affiliate, and then Seguro Popular is it's a financing agency. Minister of Health provides most of the care, but that there's a need there also to strengthen services for migrants in Mexico to enable them to have the trust of migrants, which is, as we saw by the expenditure figures, most of that going to private services. There's a need for them to have the trust that instead of sending their remittances on an emergency basis, that they could then affiliate for a much lower figure and have access to quality service. Now, the nonprofit insurers would then work on the primary healthcare package in the U.S. They would, of course, be overseen by the various insurance departments, or we could have the Salud Migrante agency do that work. Importantly, Salud Migrante would be developing a branded package of services, the Salud en el Norte, and providing through the accreditation mechanism some form of concession or franchising arrangement whereby they could all address that package more universally, and then have healthcare centers, mainly from the community health center community, provide that. Now, very importantly, service networks would have to be established to be able to make referrals and counter-referrals with high-quality elements. also facilitated by the Salud Migrante Agency, which in Mexico they would pretty much receive migrants that are being referred to hospitals and ensuring that they receive appropriate care and ensuring communication among providers both sides of the border. So with the community agencies playing an important role in terms of guaranteeing quality and providing support to Mexicans. So in conclusion, migration requires a far-reaching government policy with a broad vision on the Mexican side. Yet on the US side, we see this as mostly a private, non-profit, and community effort to avoid the politics that could be in the way. And I hear with interest William Dow's proposal that some of the subsidies and financing could be leveraged. That's something that can be analyzed, but perhaps some counties, some states could be amenable to that. We believe that Mexico can lead a binational health insurance program, but to have that leadership, there's a need for political organizations of migrants in the U.S. to express their demand to the Mexican government that they be provided with Seguro Popular as a right, as indeed all Mexicans have that right in Mexico, but that they should then be offered the opportunity of affiliation to Seguro Popular in the U.S. without any barriers, and with the necessary contributions that could entail, but certainly not use that as a avoid falling in the cracks in that respect. Key actors from both countries have the capacity and are interested to collaborate in this regard. We have identified critical actors quite willing to do that, especially in Mexico at the state level. The Mexican governors of high migration states, they are all very much interested in this, although the federal government has its own interests in terms of how to proceed with that. They are weary of not opening themselves to a demand that they could not manage. I believe that that demand should be expressed on the U.S. side by the Mexican migrant communities, and that there is capacity can be quickly built on the Mexican side to address that demand. But that clearly the federal government does have to have some guarantees that they will be able to respond. That's how we're right now how we are collaborating in terms of consultations and piloting. And finally, the model can be partially adapted to migrants from other countries in Central America. And all of this also, in fact, the whole proposal started about 2.5 years ago when it seemed likely that a program for guest workers was about to be approved. We still believe that that will happen soon, and therefore it's still very timely to continue discussing this proposal, because this could then provide the incentives for the U.S. Congress to pass such an initiative insofar as they see that the Mexican government has in place the insurance mechanisms that could provide incentives for the guest workers to return, together with other programs that could transfer pension funds and other contributions across the border in such a way as to ensure portability of a wide range of social benefits, and therefore putting in place all the incentives on the Mexican side for migrants to return at the end of their temporary visas. Thank you very much. There is where you can find the report.
This is what the report looks like. The obviously, not so obviously, some of us here that have been talking about the subject believe that there are some opportunities, if you will, okay, with the new incoming federal administration, with a lot of activity and discussions that have been going on over the last, increasingly over the last year. We think that there are things that can happen. Okay, Miguel mentioned the prospects of some kind of action in terms of temporary workers. The popular political sentiment is that, well, when it died in 2007, in July 2007, it wasn't going to be revisited for a long time. Okay, But we're not so sure. There have been several attempts that have been below the political radar, if you will, in the last year to do significant, not huge, but significant temporary ag workers programs. And there was provisions that were about to go into several omnibus bills in the current congressional session that was pushed by people like Senator Feinstein. The language is there. The support was there from both moderate as well as Republicans and Democrats, but the administration indicated they would veto the bill, and so they backed off. There is the prospects that many employers, agricultural employers and agricultural-related employers that are largely Republicans, are saying, we need this. You know, our crops are not being picked up. There's a lot of crops that are dying in the fields, if you will, okay, not only in California but other states. So there is an impetus in the upcoming session to do something that might be a first step, you know, a million workers. And if there is a program like that, then the issue is that, is there a healthcare component? The times that the U.S. has done significant temporary workers programs, there's always been a healthcare component. Erika Sleag was an example. The whole old Bracero program from the 40s into the 60s was another example. So we think that there are some prospects, and I would like some comments and some questions, even from the presenters themselves. David.
I'd like to make one comment on mine. I left something out. And that is, there's another gap, and that's when parents, elderly parents of people who've already immigrated, want to come to visit. Essentially, there's a big risk they're going to get sick. It costs a lot of money. There's no really easy way to provide some insurance for short-term legal visitors to visit their kids here, I think, from the point of view of many families. But on Miguel Angel's presentation, there are a couple questions. In terms of people spending remittances, if they hadn't had any remittances, wouldn't they have been spending some money on private health care too?
Oh, certainly. But remittances lead to doubling of the family
the amount they spend. I see. And when you say non-profit insurers in the U.S., you know, a lot of the Blue Cross plans are now for-profit. So I don't think it depends. I mean, in some states, there's kind of quasi-nonprofit insurers, but I'm not sure that it's as widespread as you might think.
What we are trying to refer to are plans that are offering the Medicaid managed care and perhaps also Medicare products.
Yeah, they're not nonprofit.
Not necessarily nonprofit. Yeah. So indeed, they would be, because they are catering already for, well, not on the Medicare side,
right,
but on the Medicaid
right
side, they are catering for the poor. And I believe they are those that, you know, on the Medicaid side.
They're like Centene and
Yeah, we have identified in New York and in Washington State plans that have such a product. On the Washington side, they are interested in developing a new product under this characteristics. Mm-hmm. And we're working on pricing that product. But whether they are for profit or non-profit, that really regardless is, we believe that it's the non-profits that are more likely to be already working with the poor community.
And one of the things in here in California, there's an extensive network of nonprofit and government-based plans many of them are currently exploring providing products to other populations beyond the Medicaid, Medi-Cal populations, as well as the SCHIP populations. Bill, Will.
Yes. I want to commend you, Dr. Spock, for the work that you've done on this plan. I think it's terrific, so moving forward this process. One of the concerns that I have about the plan is with the, I guess what you call the Salud en Norte, the piece which is essentially selling a separate insurance plan for primary care in the United States. And in the document that you handed out, what it indicates is that this would be sold separately from the sort of catastrophic coverage in Mexico, essentially. And it would be sold individual market, it sounds like, so individuals could purchase it, way more than most low-income individuals are willing to pay for even a full Medicaid policy or SCHIP policy, much less just a skinny policy that only has the primary care. And particularly since the care would be delivered at FQHCs, which are places where individuals can largely get this care highly subsidized anyway. So it's very attractive to FQHCs because it's essentially a new revenue stream for them, but an individual actually going out and purchasing this unsubsidized, I think it's very unlikely, frankly, which is why I've been trying to push the idea of let's try to reroute those subsidies to FQHCs they have, et cetera, and use it to pay down the premium.
Right. The price estimate, which is very preliminary, that assumes some subsidies for the family or the community health centers that may come from a variety of sources, federal or whatever, or their own subsidies. In other words, it would be like marginal costs that perhaps that is not considering other investments. But coming from Mexico, this initiative, we were eager to leave it open as to the kind of subsidies that could be then obtained on this side of the border. And indeed, on the Washington pilot that is beginning to be discussed, we have identified a great deal of interest on the part of employers from the agricultural sectors to subsidize. And of course, that would be perfect and needed. We're not saying it's not needed, but we didn't want to create an immediate barrier in terms of saying that needs to be subsidized by such and such amount, but rather leave this open to various possible arrangements, but would have to be more or less fixed, so to speak, would be the package itself, so that then the migrants can then aspire to access that package, and then also Seguro Popular in Mexico can at least have assurance that they would be having preventive care and therefore not postponing care and avoiding complications and being the insurer of last resort, so to speak. So that, but exactly how it's going to be paid, I agree with you that there still needs work to be done, and perhaps it's something we can continue discussing.
Arturo, was there a comment?
It was more of the same point of how to diminish the incentives of the community clinics to just like crowd out. How much like Mexican already only crowd out subsidies that already they receive from the federal government or the state government in the US, and they already are providing services. It was more of the same point of that wheel. Uh-huh. But I'm thinking more about your presentation right now on how, once you estimate all these subsidies that migrants receive in by county, state, federal government, how you can operationalize some plan that could involve a national coverage, taking into consideration all these subsidies.
It would have to be a very explicit, complicated negotiation among the parties who are involved in this. It's not a trivial matter, or easy to resolve. It has to be done, otherwise it's going to be very difficult to actually put together a plan which is going to be sustainably financed.
You know, I think there was a comment by an old-time political organizer said, "Let 1,000 flowers bloom." Again, I think in a situation there's a need perhaps for to let a number of different kind of projects develop to explore some of these specific concepts. And in a lot of ways, it's going to really, in some ways, have to become from top down, where the resources are there's a mandate to push, say, for those aggregation of subsidies to happen and to push a collaboration between the private sector and the public sector in certain areas. That collaboration will look different in California versus, say, the Washington versus New York versus... Okay. Was there a comment in the back? Okay. Yes, Perfetto. This is going to be the last question, so we're at 4 o'clock.
We were talking about Medicare, Medicaid. Now, my question is, and the three of you can respond to it, in relationships to these local initiatives, you know, many of these local initiatives sit in these communities that are heavily impacted by a lot of non-citizens, non-residents who access services through just a variety of certain entities, be it the county, be it the public. Why don't you consider discussion because they're there. They're there in the community, and they're the ones that are serving these underserved individuals. And I think that may be another window of opportunity, because if you're still looking at the federal level, that's going to be a long wait. But if you look more at the local level, see what the resources there, and I think that could be a beginning of some type of dialogue, because there are a variety of these local initiatives in California that have, you know, some reserves to do certain things to invest back into the community. And I think that's something that should be considered as an opportunity versus just something that's just sitting there as an outlier.
I wholly agree. I think the federal government needs to be involved, just because so much of the financing originates at the federal level. So that some of the financing that gets passed through to the counties, the counties have a great deal of control. A lot of that money actually originated at the federal level at some point. But I agree with you. I think the counties are actually the linchpin here, and that they have to be sort of front and center in driving this, particularly in California, where the counties have such a big control over what happens in one of the states. So I think they would have to be leading in the direction.
Yeah. I'd like to thank you all. One last comment here.
Just on the same subject, it seems to me there's a lot of push for these free share programs that never get too big. But the big question is, who pays the third share? You kind of get the employee to put something in, the employer, and then most local governments aren't willing to put it in. But if you could get some of the federal money in, and you get some Mexican money in, maybe
we got a four share.
You got a four share. Or you can cut down how much the worker has to do if you're sharing with the employer a bit more. But it seems to me you could work kind of some free card Monty with these individual local entities like counties and maybe get some interesting things. But one question I have, though, is it seems to me you're gonna hit up the Mexican worker up here to pay for the family into Salud Popular, right? In other words, and it seems to me unfair if you use the same metric for determining whether they owe premiums or not, or how much premium they owe, because they've got to maintain a separate household up here. They, they have expenses here. There's also expenses down there.
Sure.
And so it seems to me that you'd have to be a little more, a little more liberal in terms of how you're signing up people down there.
Now, there are many reasons the Mexican government is considering to lower the contribution on the migrant. One of them is, of course, that they wouldn't be using the primary health care, so they would be paying additionally. And furthermore, the government is having limitations on the Mexican side to receive contributions. So the migrant on this side says, look, my cousin in the village is not paying anything, and he's in the plan. Why should I pay? You could argue you're earning more, but still, I mean, that there is a need to lower that, and the government is considering that very seriously. So, but the comment is, it's just an argument.
Thank you again for the participants and for our observers, if you will. Okay. And we have a session tomorrow. I would like to encourage you to come to, in the same room, in fact, at 10:30 on healthcare reform in California. We in California have the arrogance to think that what we did but failed to do, okay, has something we can teach other people about it. So that's basically. And there's a little leaflet, if you will, out there. Tomorrow, 10:30. Thank you.
So pink is much.
Finally, yeah. Me too. Yeah, I was down at INSB 2 weeks ago.
Oh, really?
And, yeah, I didn't get it.
With whom were you?
I was staying with Steph's house, and so I gave a talk.
Steph Bertolini?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Well, you have a copy of this, right?
Yes, I do. Yeah.
Can I just grab one?
Please. And I think it's an opportunity to further discuss the Sochil and Gil were very kind of considering sponsoring
I know. It's a part of the Brazilian schedule. But I think it's
I am thinking of the importance of having a high-profile publication. Identifying progress with the financial health insurance. More conceptual things, but
like a review.
Yeah, some kind of review.
Taking perhaps some of the work we've done here,
but something that can also reflect the national
effort,
so that we can really integrate around that publication.
I think that would be terrific. I think that would provide some visibility and help get people more excited about that.
And perhaps bringing David Warner's policy of Medicare also into the complement is very well.
That
is a part of being
more implemented. I think there's.
We're thinking of some kind of high profile publication coming perhaps out of the discussions to be sent to health fairs and focusing on the conceptual aspects of the debate and progress to date, reviewing the key publications, and indeed the European Union experience that could be extremely useful to have. So how do you
I'd be happy to. So do you, how do you want to go about it? I mean, do you want to just take this, or should we all write something in addition? Or?
Well, I think it would be useful to
right.
But we need someone to
coordinate.
Yes.
That's too difficult.
So we can check a coin right now. No, I would be willing to certainly take a preliminary lead until something is assembled, and then we can see if someone else wants to polish it off.
I'd very much like to.
You think you could be interested?
Very much, the next month I'm tied up with what to do about the U.S., but after that...
No, but with the ideas that are here, that are in the
No.
Maybe you can send me additional information.
I have a copy of this.
I have a copy. You kindly gave it to me in Sacramento.
Right.
You have this? You have a copy?
I just got one.
You got
one. Excellent.
Right. And so I have the presentations are available online, so I can download. And I can put some of the ideas together.
Yeah.
It's a sketch.
Yeah, the EU is, because I went and I interviewed a lot of people in the EU last summer. And it's still a work in progress, but it's so much. Part of the problem, of course, is they all have.
And they just approve something new, right?
Was that thing I talked about, where if you. If it's in your national health plan, but you don't get, you can't get it after a certain period of time.
Probably will be caught in the courts, I guess.
But most people have insurance already, and so everybody's negotiating the transfers.
Right. Everybody, in other words, everybody has a national health system, whereas we only have one country in NAFTA that has a national health system.
Although, because the retirees are in Spain or Italy.
Well, but many are also in Morocco, and I don't think they are going to be covered, right?
There may be some French Moroccan relationship,
but it's still easier that those that benefit eventually are the Spanish health system, in the sense that they get the dollars.
Well, that's right, the Spanish health system, but that doesn't trickle down to the individual Spanish doctors and hospitals, and they resent it. But,
true.
And that's more for the British, but the Germans and the Belgians, they're. Plans actually have networks of private providers in Spain that they contract and that they pay on, their agreed on fee service. So I think there's lots of interest. I think that would be great. I mean, I think that there's got to be some movement. I mean, because it's
indeed.
Yeah.
But I think at this stage. A publication that could truly identify these critical issues.
Mm-hmm.
And
I mean, very timely, especially with the election.
Yeah, so I think that we ought to start planting the seeds within the Obama campaign. This isn't something that they really focus on. Obama hasn't wanted to talk publicly about ensuring immigrants and during the election, but I suspect.
Yeah, very likely.
in a more secure position.
All right, well, I hope to see you in Berkeley sometime soon then.
Hopefully, yeah, I look forward to it. Maybe it would be the opportunity to finish off the paper.
Yeah, we can. Next
week, this Hermosillo group that wants to do medical tourism called me, and they said they had Julio going.
Indeed.
Julio's going to be there?
And Octavio, also,
Octavio
is writing his paper, and I told Octavio about your paper. I made it available.
Well, he was just going to, okay, good. And also, the current Surgeon General,
Enrique Ruelas.
Enrique is going to be there.
He will be.
Yeah. So, it's like, we'll see.
So you will be there also?
Yes. Good. Yes. They told me Julio was coming. I wasn't sure whether that was an invited but not accepted.
No, partly, yes. Octavio is writing the paper.
Okay.
He called me for some advice.
So is Octavio going to be there too?
Or I don't know. Normally he doesn't attend.
Yeah.
He writes it.
Right.